All right, we're going to start here. This is another installment in our ongoing series of the laws of life. Our question tonight is, what is the law of fixation and how can aspirants best harness it? Shuffled the tarot deck and laid it out. And we have the following spread. We have the starting point is the Fool, upside down. The Fool is number zero in the major arcana, which gives it a special position all by itself. The counterpoint is the Ten of Cups, right side up. The ten makes a one. The challenge is the Ace of Rods, right side up. The Ace is a one, so that's two ones in a row. The purpose is the Five of Pentacles, right side up. The endowment is the Nine of Cups, right side up. The destiny is the Two of Swords, right side up. The real question is the Devil, upside down. And if you're ever going to have the Devil, it might as well be upside down. It's number 15 in the Major Arcana, which makes it a 6. The Unseen Forces is the Four of Pentacles, right where it was the last time we were doing this 2 weeks ago with the reading on, or the examination of the Law of Monadic Return. The Spiritual Ideal is the Lovers, upside down. That's number 6. In the Major Arcana, so we have 2 sixes, both in the Pillar of Revelation. And we have the Fulfillment is the Ace of Cups upside down, making both of the top cards aces, and three ones being the ten, the ace, and the ace. So we have 6 upright cards, 4 reverse cards, 3 majors being the Fool, the Devil, and Lovers. We have 1 sword, that being the card of destiny, the 2 of swords. We have 1 rod, the Ace of Rods. We have 3 cups and 2 pentacles. And in addition to the Four of Pentacles, which appeared in the Law of Monadic Return, the Ace of Cups and the Two of Swords also appeared several times ago in the examination of freedom. And there's a definite resonance between the concept of fixation and freedom. You may not be familiar with the Law of Freedom. The Law of Freedom is one of the 7 systemic laws of this solar system. It corresponds to Ray 5, and hence is very important in terms of the mind. And it basically states that it is the mind that stabilizes and controls the personality, producing coherency. That coherency is at the level of the soul, the level of the causal body. And so that's why we have the starting point is the Fool. The Fool represents the soul, the spiritual person, which the personality and average humanity has a hard time understanding because its purposes, its goals, its attitudes and values are frequently completely different than ours down here in the materialistic plane. So the Fool very adequately defines this particular reading. The Fool is a fellow that has a rod representing the mind over his right shoulder, a pure white rose or other flower in his hand, symbolizing purity, and he has dominated and conquered the ancient evil, the residue of ancient evil, because he's look at all the very fine work in his cloak and his headband and so on. This is a card of inflowing divine energy as represented by the hatch marks at the top of the frame. So this is a law that doesn't come into human existence or have much impact upon the personality, apparently, except for one thing. And that is, it's basically a duplicate of the law of karma. In other words, it's the systemic law which allows the law of karma to work. And so fixation is a principle that generates karma. And what that means is that when you create any act or make any expression, take any action in life, you create a pattern which is then attached to you. It's not sent off to some central office of karmic affairs where they add another notch to one side of the chalkboard or another. It becomes part of your character, part of your creative equipment at the level of the soul. And every act you take creates that kind of karmic imprint, which is either helpful to you in the long run or is something that you may not view as helpful, but helps you learn to grow. So we create our own karma. We don't create the law of karma. We don't create the principle of karma, but we fix it. Every action we take, it becomes a fixed point of karma that we take with us as we go through life. And the purpose of this is to give us a basis or a structure becomes our foundation for action. And that's why I have chosen the picture by Dali to have up on the screen here, the Santiago el Grande, the great Saint Juan, or Saint James. And look at all the structure behind Santiago on his horse, and all these points where the various lines crisscross and form this elaborate structure. That's kind of like, well, that's a perfect symbol for the points of fixation which the soul deals with in processing and winnowing the acts of karma. Obviously, the law of fixation is that as we strive to integrate the acts we perform, the actions we take with our higher ethics and virtues, then that becomes this glorious structure. At first, it's a very rudimentary kind of thing, and it fixes us kind of like a dagger through a butterfly would fix it or something of that nature. Maybe a needle through a butterfly, to be more reasonable. But once we get the hang of this and understand how this law works, we are able to gain control of the process of fixation. But it works through this dynamic of karma, which is not punitive in any way. The purpose of karma is to teach us the basic lessons of creating a fixed position, a fixed foundation for our thinking, our acting, and our aspiration. So purity is a very important part of this. The mind is a very important part of this. It may be surprising to you that there's only one rod, but of course, in this spread, but there's two rods because the fool has the rod there. And in fact, what this reading is about is how the mind can be used to discipline and control the rest of the personality so that it harnesses the law of fixation and produces stability, produces posture, an enlightened posture toward life. It creates balance and equilibrium so that, for example, when we get over to the Four of Pentacles, we will be able to establish equilibrium between the personality and mass consciousness, the personality and the environment. So this whole spread is extremely rich in discussing how we establish this balance, this equilibrium, and create posture, which is what is represented by the Ace of Rods. And this is a divine force. I know you're looking down here at the Devil card, but you need to understand that that has its part to play here. It's not negative. And the real key here is the divine force entering at the top of the Fool card. Of course, it's upside down, so it's entering at the bottom of the Fool card as it's spread out here. And so the law of fixation is a means by which we can focus divine energy into the physical plane and thereby illuminate it. So this is very powerful. This is very important. It's a way for that we can learn to use the nature of consciousness as though we've been looking through a mirror darkly, and now we begin to see. And so it allows us to see reality as it truly is. We'll get to that in a little bit. Then we come to the counterpoint, the Ten of Cups, and we have the man and the woman, and they're staring goo-goo eyes at each other, and we have the rainbow coming into the central big cup, and all the other cups arrayed around it in perfect order. And so this reminds us, which we will see in full force as we talk about the last half of the spread, this reminds us that we, throughout our we're designed to seek out our polar opposite. Men are designed to seek out women. Women are designed to seek out men. We're designed to seek out the soul. We're designed to, if we have half of a loaf, we're designed to go find the other half of the loaf, so to speak. And this is the union of the pairs of opposites. Yet it recognizes that throughout most of our lives, we don't recognize our true opposite. We don't recognize what makes us whole. Always in this condition here on earth, it is the soul that makes us whole. It is spirit. And so we're here in the physical plane. It's easy to forget where we are. But our true quest is to find that which will make us whole, that which will enrich our life, the soul, spirit. And even though we don't know that, we're still driven and motivated to find that and complete the circle, to complete the wholeness. And that's what the law of fixation allows us to do. We will see how it does that very, very clearly, I think, as we go on. Okay, before I go any further, any comments and questions about the first two cards? Anybody? All right. I'm going to have to mute because there's an echo, but the card of the in the challenge position is the Ace of Rods. This, of course, is the first card in the suit of rods, which stands for the mind. And it is one rod growing out of a seed planted in the earth amid the residue of ancient evil, those black things at the bottom. And this tells us very distinctly that the mind is the source of stability. It is the mind that is fixed. Now, I want to make it very clear that I'm talking in the in the ideal here. I'm not talking about fixed ideas. The mind can distort this principle into a cruel parody or satire of it. We don't want that. We don't want you to be fixed in ideology or isms or schisms or theology or anything of that nature. We want the mind to be free and liberated so that it becomes a genuine source of stability, not something stuck in the mud, stuck in the ruts. So we understand that the mind, when fully developed and in conscious control, can shape the personality and infuse into it the stability that it needs to take a stand in life, to know who we are, what we're doing, why we're doing it, and so on. And this gives us a real key to this, because in a real sense, this Ace of Rods is springing forth from a seed. And what we have, what we start with, is a seed of possibilities at the level of the soul. And over lifetime after lifetime, we experience this adventure, this, make this decision, etc. We create karma. And again, we may very well have read a lot about karma from Eastern sources, where they want to get off the wheel of rebirth. They want to get off the wheel of karma. But what they really, that's a bad translation. What they really mean is we want to control the wheel of karma. We want to be able to, like the Greeks, the Fates, spin the spinning wheel so that there's a proper balance between the past, the present, and the future. And we're in control of the spindle of necessity. And in fact, for those of you who took Walden Ultra, we spent quite a little bit of time in the fourth session, I think, or fifth session, whatever it was, talking about the use of the spindle of necessity as a symbol, I guess it was fourth session, a symbol of generating control in your own life, control of events. Well, this dovetails perfectly here. And so we create seeds in the mind. They grow up to become mature thoughts, and as they grow, they let us stand. And in fact, that's one of the most powerful things the mind can do, is understand or stand under the ideals and talents and values of the soul. And eventually, when we have the full picture here, not just half the picture, the person only has half the picture. It you mentioned the word karma, and most people groan. Oh, that's my bad karma. Well, that's half the picture. In fact, it's less than half the picture, because most karma is very excellent karma. But the karma fixes you. One of the principles of karma is where the tree falls, there it lies. In other words, most people... You can tell a lot about your immediate past life by where you were born in this lifetime. Usually the location is fairly close to where you died at the end of the last lifetime. Now, there are exceptions. I mean, if you died at sea, it might not be feasible to have you born on a freighter or something like that. So there are always exceptions and things, but more or less, if you are if you die in the eastern United States, you'll probably be born somewhere in the eastern United States, maybe surprisingly close, because the karma fixes you. The law of fixation fixes you to that spot. Notice in the Dali painting of Santiago el Grande, the horse is fixed in the ocean, standing on the ocean, right next to the edge of Spain. You can tell it's Spain because of this saintly figure over here on the right. And so an awful lot of Dali is fixed in the Spanish tradition, just like much of literature is fixed in the tradition of the homeland of the author. Now, there's still great flexibility among this, because if you're born in this country, you might travel the world and end up dying in Africa or someplace. And that would then be probably where you would start another lifetime. But, and I'm not making this as a hard and fast rule. I'm simply indicating, using this as an illustration of how important the law of fixation is to our progress through life. And we probably have a completely immature attitude toward karma because we see it in a punitive sense rather than as a creative tool of the soul. This is one of the seven great, the law of fixation is, according to DK, one of the seven primary laws of our solar system. And that it is directly connected to laws of the cosmic mental plane as an extension. So it's very important to understand this and see this as a creative tool that liberates. That's why I mentioned it so much in sync with what we talked about freedom. It liberates our consciousness once we're able to focus in the mind, because it is the mind where fixation can occur. It's not that the mind becomes fixated. It is that the mind learns to use the principle and tool of fixation to establish a sense of stability, understanding. It responds to purpose. And the three way, there are three great ways that it does this. It does it based on values, talents, and ideals. And we're going to see this. The values are represented in the Ace of Rods. The ideals are represented in the Five of Pentacles. And the talents are represented in the Nine of Cups. So the next three cards tell us how important the mind is in this process, because as we create values, as we respond to ideals, as we develop talents, these are the great forces that give us stability in our life, that give us focus and location in our life. And, you know, it's very common for people to identify with their homeland. Irish poets are always talking about Ireland and writing about Ireland, and British poets do the same thing, and American writers glorify their home area. And that's all well and good. Deep inside of that is an innate recognition that we need to be based in our home values and virtues. But it has nothing to do with the physical location. It has to do with the soul. That is our home. That is always our home and operating base. So the values of the mind are derived from divine virtues. The ideals of the mind are to be derived from archetypal forces, spiritual qualities. The talents of the mind, which can range anywhere from creativity to the capacity of love to lead, et cetera, are to be derived from the talents of the soul. So right here we have this perfect little demonstration in this triangle between the Ace of Rods and the Five of Pentacles and the Nine of Cups, as to what gives us stability, what gives us coherency. As we learn to work inspired by values, ideals, and talents, we build into our whole system a stronger and stronger foundation of stability and coherency. And after all, the word coherent is a description of the mind. If somebody speaks lucidly and forcefully, they're known as coherent. And conversely, somebody that rambles all over the place and you can't ever figure them out is usually described as incoherent. What does that mean? Well, it means that the ideas are scattered to the far dimensions, and if you took the time to the outer rim, if you took the time to assemble them, there might be flashes of brilliance there, but they're incoherent. And so as we learn to organize the mind and put it together and base it on values, ideals, and talents, we create a fixed foundation that we can take into any lifetime and recreate a active, dynamic personality that is responsive to spirit. The key lies in the mind rules. It's the mind that rules. It's the mind that rules the emotions. It's the mind that rules the physical level, the etheric plane. Okay, so we've established this with the Ace of Rods. Now we go on to the Five of Pentacles, which is the purpose. And we have this marvelous image that I always like. Two pilgrims, man and female. There we have the duality again. On a pilgrimage somewhere to Mecca or Adyar or somewhere, Shambhala, on the road to Shambhala. And there above them is the church window with these five pentacles in it, and it looks like an organ loft. But there's this white space, which indicates there's a gap between their consciousness and the consciousness of the ideals. So they're trudging along. They're on their pilgrimage. They're on the spiritual path. Or so they think. They're heading for their goal, but they really don't know what it is. And they're blind to the inner realities of spirit, which is hovering inches above their heads. So what this means is that fixed points on the physical plane are illusions. We look at, I'm looking at a glass of water right now. It looks solid. Even the water, which I know to be liquid, looks solid because it isn't swishing around. If I hit the table, it swishes a little bit. But the glass is solid. The water looks solid. And there's nothing real about it. It's there because we have a mind that focuses those attributes to it. It's the mind says, that glass is solid and it will hold that liquid. That's all it is. If I was very tiny, I could walk across that water. Mm-hmm. See? The mind knows how to do that. And so what we're saying here is, from the point of view, it's important to distinguish between the stability of the illuminated mind that is responsible to the soul and the pseudo-stability, the faux stability of people who think they know it all and don't know anything at all in the physical plane, i.e. your average devotee that's off to find the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. This is the illusion of physical plane. One of the things that fixes us in our time and place is the whole concept of time. We are born, we grow up, we do our work, we die, and we let that measure of time fix our expectations and our understanding and dominate our understanding so that we have only the vaguest concept of eternity. Eternity is the reality, not time. Time is a limitation. So again, this is a false kind of fixation that we have. And what we have to do is realize that the law of fixation enables us to establish our sense of identity and poise and posture, not be dominated by false goals like going to see the Wizard of Oz. Okay, let me pause briefly here and see if there's any comments or questions. comments, questions? Anybody so far? No? The window of opportunity is rapidly coming to an end.
Carl, just a question on the law of freedom. It's one of the seven primary laws you had said.
Law of fixation.
Of the law of fixation.
Yeah, law of fixation. Okay. We dealt with freedom about a month ago.
Okay. For some reason, I...
You were talking about it earlier.
Yeah, I talked about it.
Okay, so the law of fixation then is one of the seven.
Right.
Okay.
And basically, it's very attuned to Ray 5. It goes hand in hand with Ray 5, and therefore, it is what creates the mind. And it creates the mind so that the mind creates stability and fixed positions. But from an enlightened point of view, that stability is involved in values, ideals, and talents, not in places, time, or activities. However, the activity element comes under the purview of it, the parallel law of karma, which is completely intertwined in the law of fixation. And again, karma is a benevolent process that lets us build the foundation of who we are. And if you want to think of yourself as a cathedral in the process of being built, if you're on the spiritual path, it's probably 80-90% built. And it's certainly far more built than it is unbuilt. Okay, any further comments or questions before I go on? All right. Somebody have something?
I was just going to ask if, say, you're in a lifetime where you don't develop your talent, is then it part of your lesson for another lifetime to, like you're presented with a lot more opportunity to develop a particular talent that you missed out on previously?
Well, that might be, but you're probably not missing out on it. You may think that you're missing out on it, but you're probably not missing out on it. It's probably the intent of the soul to work on different talents, ideals, and values that lifetime. Perhaps you're just spending that lifetime burning off a lot of old karmic residue. And that would be the type of life where you no sooner get over one hurdle that you get hit by another one. And it's just one catastrophe after another. But almost always, when a person really takes the plunge and enters the spiritual path, there is a lifetime or two like that, where your goal is just to clean up as much of the karmic residue as you can, so that you're not bogged down in the negative aspects of karma. Also keep in mind that as you're doing that, you're learning the basic techniques of transforming the residue of ancient evil, because you're taking on all this karma in a very short, condensed sequence of time. You may not have time left over to do anything else, but you're redeeming the negativity within yourself. And that's the first and most important lesson for any aspirant to learn. So that's a very benevolent process, even though the personality usually is not 100% ecstatic about it.
So, Carl, we're always updating these 6 points then.
What 6 points?
The fixed point.
Fixed.
Oh, fixed. Fixed points. Well,
I mean, like a point within a greater light. We're a point of light within a greater light, but we're kind of updating these points through the mind. I mean, I'm thinking of those values and virtues, and
they're becoming stronger and more mature at all the every step of the way. Yes. It's not updating so much as it's strengthening and
refining.
Yeah, refining, making them more powerful. The
I'm seeing an optic lens and how you turn it a little bit and the light gets brighter all of a sudden, like if you use the scope on a microscope just right, you get the light is stronger at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Very good. Okay. I need to get going. So I'll try not to mute, but we'll see how it goes. The next card is the card of endowment. This is the Nine of Cups. This is our Jolly Green Giant, although he's really the Jolly Green Dwarf, it looks like. And he's not green. But he's the competent tradesman who knows his craft. He knows he's talented. He knows he's skilled. He wears his beret in kind of a cocky angle, and he's got his arms down by his waist in a kind of defiant, try to knock this chip off of my shoulder attitude because of all the conflict that he has on his shoulders. But up above him are all these nine cups, and these are his talents. This guy is really talented. The talents exist at the level of the soul, or at least in the higher mind. But he is the agent of expressing those talents. And through his hard work, by God, he knows he did build that. And that's an expression of talent. It's an expression of skill. So we have completed the trifecta here, and we've established that the real points of fixation that define who we are spiritual virtues, which we convert to values, spiritual qualities, which we convert to ideals, and spiritual forces, which we convert to talents. And what this means is that each of us, as we develop skill in the art of living, we shape our future far more powerfully than any one of us realizes. This is the law of fixation. We're learning to harness this law of fixation, even if we're stumbling around and not achieving anything. We are guided by fixed points that never vary. You could think of those cups as the 1,000 points of light that one of our former presidents talked about. We know who we are, and we know that we're an agent of light. As Mimi mentioned, we're a point of light within a larger light, within a larger life. And so this is our endowment. We have thousands of lifetimes, at least hundreds of lifetimes, under our belt that make us who we are. And so the real fixed point of our life, even though there really is no fixed point in the physical sense, in the sense of solids. But the real fixed point is the soul. Everything at the personal level is transitory and therefore of little importance. Where we live, where we're born, type of family we grew up in, all of those things are conveniences for the sake of our karmic destiny. But none of them describe who we are and why we're here. So then we come on to the card of destiny here, the Two of Swords. And the Two of Swords is a naked lady, blindfolded. Well, she's not naked. She's got a blindfold on. What am I talking about? She's wearing her headband a little bit lower, and it's over her eyes. She's got incredibly flowing brown hair. She's artfully decorated and disguised and hidden behind these huge monoliths of the residue of ancient evil. And she's got two swords, creating a vector pointing upwards into spirit. And one sword represents the inner, And the other sword represents the outer, the inner and the outer elements of her being. The inner connection being the soul and the outer connection being the personality. And so it is, again, as I said, the soul that forms the real point of fixation. And it is the intuition, symbolized by the blindfold, the inner sight, that reveals to us the real points of fixation, which are our stability, our capacity to stand, our capacity to be creative. And always we must search that out from spirit. It's almost as though there's the sun is just above her head. The light that she is just above her head. Now, it's important to understand that the two swords, again, represent duality. And we've seen duality before in the male and the female. We'll see that again in the Lover's card and in the Devil card. But now that we've done our initial point, counterpoint, and the three aspects of fixation, meaning values, ideals, and talents, with karma thrown in there for good measure, we are now prepared to start a whole new chapter here. We're about to hit the pillar of revelation. But this one actually starts with the Two of Swords, the card of destiny, because we're going to start looking at ways that those two pairs of opposites, the duality of the two swords, get fused. And by the time we get to the Lover's card, they're acting as a whole, complete whole. So we're not talking about fixation in the sense of ruts that keep us trapped in a prison. That would be something that would have to be liberated from. We're talking about a fixed awareness of spiritual purpose. Kind of, I think the ultimate example of this is the Christ saying, "My Father is busy and I must join him in his work." That's a different translation than you may have heard, but it is the more accurate translation. My Father is busy at work and I must join him in his task. And that describes the essence of fixation completely. But we have to understand from a personality point of view that this is the union of the inner and the outer. This is the union of the soul and the personality. This is the essence of companionship. The personality doesn't try to go it all on its own. It's meaningless without the soul. The soul is not fulfilling its purpose if it doesn't have a personality to act through. So we find unity here as the two become as one. And this was one of the cards of freedom in our examination of the law of freedom. All right, now we come down to the pillar of revelation. And I'll pause. I haven't muted anything. You're all free to talk whenever you want. But any questions before I start the pillar of revelation?
Cole, I don't have a question, but over the weekend I was reading From Heaven to Earth with Leadbeater, and he was talking about like psychotherapy or people who have used drugs who live on a totally emotional plane, have to express their anger, and how they almost shoot holes in their emotional...
Oh, they do shoot holes. They tear yeah. large gashes. In their...
It's like the opposite. So people who live on the emotional, they're stunting their growth. It's almost like you think of those holes, everything is just kind of going through. They're not retaining. Whereas tonight, you know, working on a mental plane, holding on, growing with spirit, you're in a sense retaining, but it's a forward, it's a growing. It's a strengthening. I mean, just looking at Dolly's picture, you just see the opening where there's no holes. I mean, there's light, it's growth, it's expansion.
Right. Okay, very well said, because that leads us to the position of the real question and the card of the devil. And what we have here are the forces that split the duality into antagonistic forces. The male and the female are not looking at each other right now. They are butt to butt. They're facing opposite directions. You can almost imagine that they've taken the 10 paces and they're about ready to turn around and shoot each other. This has nothing to do with Satan or demonic forces or anything. It simply is the opposite of what we would define as ideal. Now, here's something that is a brave new idea that you may not have thought about before. Possibly I've mentioned it, but I hope to be able to express this with some clarity and coherency, since I'm talking about the law of fixation. This is very key. The question here is, whatever you're working on, what is it that you lack? What is it that splits and divides? What is it that antagonizes? For example, what is the force that is opposing the spiritualization of life on Earth? Well, it's the force of materialism. And it's much more powerful, or seems to be, than the force of spirit, because it can stymie the efforts of the members of light to do whatever they're trying to do. And it seems that the force of materialism is capable of sabotaging the force of spirit. That's an illusion, of course. If you're fixed using the law of fixation, if you're fixed in the power of spirit, you know that beauty always neutralizes ugliness, that generosity always neutralizes and eliminates selfishness, and so on and so on and so on. You have these realizations, you have these 1,000 points of light made up of values, ideals, and talents. And so you can draw that which has been separated, you can draw it back together. And so the mind is a great analytical force. The intellectual mind is a great analytical force, which often acts by engendering doubt and separation. That can't be done. That's beyond the realm of possibility. Don't even bother to think about it. And therefore, great opportunity is missed, because the opportunity to grow is dismissed out of hand. It can't be right. It must be wrong. And so, even though the mind is the great motive engine for fixation, stability, coherency, it is at the same time the great motive energy for separation and division and cleavage. It's the force that comes between us and our goal. It's the force that opposes us. But the real question is, what do I need to learn in order to discover how to harness that force of opposition and make it work for me? See? The horse that Santiago is riding, a glorious steed standing up on its hind legs here, and the forelegs are almost prancing in midair, and he's in complete control. And his arm is extended and he's touching the Christ. What a great symbol for the mind ruling the personality, and through the mind, spirit flowing in. So from the very top all the way down through to the very bottom of that painting, you have perfect control through the principle of fixation. And so the dynamic key here, and I hope I'm making this clear, is whenever you find yourself in a situation where it seems you're being overwhelmed, or it seems that materialism is stronger than spirit, you need to reaffix yourself in the life of spirit and and harness that power that lets you dominate the and control and discipline the forces of cleavage. So that's the real question. Is the mind tends to focus, the untrained mind, the lower mind, tends to focus on what splits and divides. And so you have all these atheists and agnostics running around saying, well, there can't be any God. I've never seen God, so it can't exist. And that's just splitting, you see, and dividing and separating, pitting man against woman, parent against child, white against black, whatever it is, man against woman. This is the force of cleavage, the force that splits. But it's an illusion. It's only a temporary condition until the spiritual aspirant comes along and reunites it. So that's the message of this final pillar. What will serve to reunite the cloven pairs of opposites? We come to the four.
Essentially making life sacred?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Then we come to the unseen forces, and we have the Four of Pentacles. And the Four of Pentacles is a man or a woman with a pentacle at the top, the crown of the head, one at the heart, and two at the hands. It's a symbol of creativity. But this time it represents the human being as a fixed point in mass consciousness. Those blobs on either side of him represent mass consciousness. And so he has achieved a fixed point of stability and posture, identity, in the midst of mass consciousness. So no matter what tsunamis rush into his life, what fear may sabotage him, bushwhack him in the middle of the night, what depression may sweep over him, he is a positive force against mass consciousness. Now, most of us are still negative forces vis-a-vis mass consciousness. But one of the purposes of writing the MassCon Recon blog is to encourage you all to become stronger and stronger positive forces as you interact with mass consciousness. You don't let your moods and humors be dictated by the trash and garbage in mass consciousness. You know who you are, you create that, and you eliminate the negativity coming at you. Doesn't mean that you oppose it or defy it. You simply know the source of your strength and your place in mass consciousness. Another way of looking at this card is that this is a card not of the physical person, but of the causal body. The causal body is the part of the soul or the shell of the soul that builds up lifetime after lifetime through all the lifetimes that we have. And it contains the patterns of karma and memories and talents and skills and everything we learn. And then when we have passed the fourth initiation, the transfiguration, and we come to the crucifixion, this causal body has to be shattered so that there can be a union of the personality and the monad. Hence, this is why this is in the same position as in the last one on the law of monadic return. So this is the force. This represents the force that anchors us in the midst of chaos. This is the light that shines forth even in a prison of darkness. So no matter where we go or what we experience, if we find ourselves in the midst of darkness, we remember that we are light, irradiating, and the light dispels the darkness. The light heals the darkness. Even if we're in the middle of chaos, our inner nature is stability. We know it's stability because we have learned to harness the law of fixation. And so we're able to be in the world of mass consciousness, but not of the world of mass consciousness. We are able to be in the world of form and not of the world of form. And this is the key here. And the key is becoming a positive force vis-a-vis the world around us, which is also the message of the Fool. All right, then we come to the spiritual ideal, and we have the Lover's card. This is a very rich card artistically, one we could trip out on, looking at all the different colors and patterns and art deco. It's a man and a woman, again, going goo-goo gaga with each other. And there are rods in the background. And down here in the lower right-hand corner, there's all this intricate stuff that indicates that there has been the mastery and domination of ancient evil, and these are creative parties here. This is the creation of coherency. Out of duality comes unity. This is the actual dynamic meaning. The woman shall leave her family and join with the man, and the two shall become as one. The two shall become as one. That's what the law of fixation is all about. We go through hundreds of lifetimes experiencing the duality of life on earth, forgetting our inner being until we rediscover it. And then once we rediscover spirit, the major lesson of training the mind and developing its creativity, values, and ideals is this whole idea of creating unity out of duality, seeing the opposite side, recognizing that what opposes you is every bit as important to you as what inspires you. What opposes you is every bit as important as what motivates you and drives you. And we need to understand that the real message of seeking our opposite self, seeking our perfect complement, again, the real complement is the soul, but this is the creative thing that if you value goodwill, you willingly draw hatred and animosity to you in order to dissolve it in that goodwill. If you and that pattern follows through in everything you can do. If you are an agent of prosperity, you willingly incarnate into an impoverished setting so that you can transform poverty into prosperity, and on and on and on and on. We seek out our opposite number in order to unite with it, not to defeat it. And so this is the spiritual ideal. This is the use of the power of attraction, the power of love, to draw to us that which needs our transformation, and then in the unity, that transformation takes place, and new life is created and born and develops. That can't be done without a sense of fixation, without a sense of, I know who I am, I know the roots of my ideas, I know the source of my being. It is the Father, the Monad. And therefore, I'm going forth into the outer wilderness, and I will be a voice crying in the wilderness, drawing to me those that need this understanding and transforming them. Then we come to the final card, which is the Ace of Cups, our second ace. This is a cup with the sun bursting forth gloriously from it. The cup is standing on a lily pond, and represents the exaltation of life from the muck and the dirt and the sludge into light. This is the upturned cup. At the end of Rubia, there's the famous invocation of Saki to turn down the cup, which is a symbolic of the end of life, but it's, notice what happens when you turn this particular cup over. The light spreads out everywhere. It's almost like in the five of cups, the three overturned cups are doing more good than the two that haven't been overturned yet, because they're spreading their liquid richness. Well, by turning the cup upside down, we can radiate light out through everywhere our emotions can reach. So this is the harnessing of the emotions so that they irradiate what we stand for. And if I could read what I write. Oh, yes. Even the fluctuating emotions, as volatile as they are, can become a servant of the fixed, stable mind. But they can't do it on their own. They have to be paired with the mind. The horse without the rider is just a wild beast. The horse with a rider is a powerful form of transportation. And so the emotions, this is the places where we're likely to run into chaos, difficulty, darkness, whatever it might be, are all physical, emotional, and lower mental. It's the higher mind that controls these. And the attempt to create a fixed point anywhere in your personality life will always meet with frustration, will always create an attachment that then you have to undo. The only point, the whole point here is that the point of fixation, the point of coherency and understanding, is the abstract mind, the soul. The soul working through the mind to establish these fixed points or seeds of inspired ideas. Okay, that's enough for tonight. Comments and questions. I might add that parenthetically that as you understand this law of fixation, there are a few laws more important to human understanding than this one. I probably say that about every one of these that I do. But this is that's the practical aspect of these. I've just given you insight that ought to revolutionize your thinking as you understand how important the unification of duality is. And that we are in control. We are in control of our karma. We're in control of our future. We are in control of our destiny. We're in control of our creative opportunities. And we should never let the narrow mind limit our possibilities. We should always look for and go beyond what we've been able to achieve in the past and look for that point of fixed values and virtues that loosens our ability to see and brings in the intuition so that we can see. Any comments or questions?
Just how motivational to not let an opportunity slip by.
Exactly. What you just said is perhaps more profound than you realize, in that our opportunities are the evidence of the life above the mean, the life of the soul seeking to guide us and inspire us and nudge us in the right direction. and the ability to gather opportunities and gather forces and bring them together and focus them into a coherent plan of action is the foundation of spiritual service. Nicely said. Anybody else?
Well, as you were speaking of this throughout the hour, I was thinking about, I mean, it's on an individual basis, it's on a collective basis. And I kept seeing both of that as we do for ourselves and work on this, you know, we're all working together to raise humanity. So it's just interesting. I was thinking about the thousand points of light at one point and trying to rectify that, where that was a lot of people working together, and yet we're doing this individually as well. So it's important, like Mary said, about the opportunities, because you're not only missing your personal opportunity, it's never your personal opportunity, but you're missing an opportunity for mankind. So we have to take those things seriously.
Yep. Absolutely. Anybody else?
Just to say that the idea of strengthening your talent upon this is a way to kind of focus on being able to strengthen yourself.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, very good. That's it on this one, the law of fixation. We'll do this again in a couple of weeks. Thank you. Good night.